Kyle Kelly is a software engineer at Rackspace, where he has worked since 2013 assisting customers with APIs, SDKs, and DevOps tools. Kyle is a core developer of the IPython Jupyter project. He wants to help build great environments for collaborative analysis, development, and production workloads for everyone, from small teams to massive scale. Kyle previously served for 3 years as a United States Department of Defense applied mathematician, and before that as a threat prevention engineer at ESOFT. He graduated from Colorado State with a bachelor's degree of science in computer sciences and a bachelor's degree in mathematics. Please welcome Kyle Kelly to the Cloud Developer Summit and Expo.
I guess I'll speak this way. Hey everybody, so I'm Kyle Kelly. Like they were saying before, I'm a software engineer, but I'm also a core developer of the IPython and Jupyter project. The IPython and Jupyter project is about providing analytic environments to your data scientists, your statisticians, your engineers, anybody who's going to play with data, work with it interactively, and then share a report with someone else. So whether or not you know it, you probably have shadow IT working out there somewhere where a statistician is using this currently to do data science. And it's at least within their circles. Things like they can do write-ups of, oh, hey, we're hitting the Facebook API, we're doing this. Here's how we do our graph and API requests over HTTP. And people end up publishing books through the same notebook format. So O'Reilly's Mining the Social Web is completely in IPython notebooks. There's a probabilistic programming book, Python for signal processing. Various institutions are using these in different capacities. And it's not just about Python. Like the name has IPython, but we're switching over to Jupyter. And to have this environment where anybody can work with the dependencies they need to do analysis and work with stuff, like they either have to run it on their own laptop and then connect to data stores, connect to where they need to, or maybe you just deploy it. So in my case, I started with Chef and wrote a cookbook. Right? So you spend all these man hours building up a cookbook to give them the exact framework that you want from an IT standpoint. Say, here's everything we need. Here's all my dependencies. Get started. Go work with it. We've already put certs up on the box. Everything's there. Right? And so at Rackspace, there's a way to click and launch the IPython notebook. And that's great. But it takes 70 minutes to bring that up. And one of the leads of the Jupyter project asked me, Nature is going to write an article, so the Nature of the Journal is going to write an article about the notebook and how it's being used. It says, is there a way that we could launch it? Like, maybe people could try the notebook? Is there a way we could just do it for them instantly? I was like, well, maybe. I mean, I could have a collection of these running or something else. And so I went ahead and created this way. So actually, I'll show it now. Live demos are exciting. I'll just bring it over there instead of switching. Okay. So right now I have this at a URL. Hopefully the conference Wi-Fi or the Wi-Fi here in the building will let me get there. But it should be one, two, and so it created a user. And then now it's loading the contents for the actual server. If my connection speed was up, it'd be one, two, and then server. Here, I'll pull up another one. So there, new server. So each time it reroutes there to the tree, it actually has created the server, but I think it's loading the contents over the Wi-Fi. Live demos. Okay, the first one didn't go well. But there it is. Okay. So like I get that full like scientific Python computing stack, and it's up in just a couple seconds. So like I can have that connected up to someone's data stores. I could have that loaded with examples for training for anybody to attend. Oh, hey, here's how we're doing our SQL queries. Here's how we're playing with this set of data. Right. Let's see if this. Are we up and running? Hey, it's loading. Okay, cool. Okay, so we're in Python now. Right? And so if I run this code, it will dynamically go ahead and create the plot for this. And there we go. We've simulated the stock market. All right, and I can switch to Julia, and I can work in R, and I have all of this at their fingertips. All right. Let's switch back. Awesome. But what powers this? And how is this working? So in that Chef deployment, the way that we were working before is that it's building up the full virtualized environment. It has to install everything right then. Instead, what we're using here is containers, in particular Docker. So we set up the requirements for what we want to install, and then I can install it anywhere. Right? I'd still do, and it launches them in less than 2 seconds. Like, it was up, but we had to wait for the Wi-Fi. Right? Great. And what's really powering this, though, is the on-metal servers. So at Rackspace, we can provision bare metal and provision it for you within minutes. And there's no hypervisor. Like, we just flash the BIOS. We flash the disk drives themselves. And so the one that it's running on now is half terabyte of RAM. And I can fit a lot of users on there. So I've been talking to the CTO at O'Reilly Media about what he could use this for, because we've been working on some Docker notebooks together. And he's got a tutorial that's coming up at Strata, and they're just going to have everybody pull that image and then run the Docker image themselves. So, and he was like, I really wish I had a way that people could just launch it. They don't have to think. Like, they can just visit a URL, and it works. I was like, oh, I've got something to show you then. Because I've got this up. Right? And there are already notebooks that have, or there are already books that have Python, that have IPython notebooks set up with them. That includes this one. And so their goal here is, if they can bring up that same environment, we can pair a book with code and data on the web, and then, like, in terms of how much these cost, like, per user, per month, this is like nothing in terms of a book. Right? How many users could we reasonably fit? Right? Let's go big. In this case, I'm going to say big is I'm going to fit 1,000 users into this half terabyte machine. Right? So that's 512 megabytes for each. Like, that's like everybody gets their own tiny VPS. Like, you get your own virtual private server that you can work with. Right? So the current price on that machine, like, if you were just going to buy one machine to do computations, that's $1,600 to get bare metal, like dedicated servers. Divide that by 1,000, though, you're talking $1.60 per user per month. And it's not like a user has to sit there all month. So for Riley, this makes complete sense. I was like, oh, someone should run a cloud on our cloud. Like, you start your $2 VPS provider. You're less than all the rest of the VPS providers. Like, I realized this last week. I was like, someone needs to do that. All right, so if you go to bit.ly/onmetal, that'll give you the overall spec sheet for the on-metal servers. And if anybody has questions, I'm happy to answer them.
So I'd like to learn a little bit more about Docker. I mean, I'm trying to understand conceptually how it works. It doesn't have a hypervisor in it, but is it transportable, a Docker container, from one system to another system? Because the OS isn't embedded in Docker.
Yeah, and so Docker will only work on a Linux machine or in a Linux VM, because what it's actually relying on is the Linux kernel. And so it's sharing the kernel with the rest of the processes that are running.
So a Red Hat version of the kernel versus another, is it?
Yeah, so my base Docker image might be running Ubuntu, but my host OS is actually Red Hat.
And that is seamless.
Right, and I can put the same ACLs like on top of the Docker container itself. Right, so you can control it the same way your Red Hat stuff does, but your developers can work in Ubuntu.
Exactly.
All right,
thank you.
Yep.
Can you give a little bit of color on the IPython Jupyter effort?
Oh, okay. So the IPython Jupyter effort was really, how do you build a better interactive experience for your code? We have kernels that work on Ruby and Node and all sorts of other languages. And the entire thing is about, can you put prose and code and other data all in one? And since we have time, I can do more demo. Let's go displays. Woohoo! Okay. Right, so I talked about being able to run the code in here. Well, let's go to another spot. Magically, the Wi-Fi is like, there you go. So, let's see. I'll do the image processing one. This one will take a second. The notebook's like 25 megs. Of course, I picked the big one. Right. Okay. So, like, the whole thing is around giving the right interactive computing experiences. In this case, I've got an image that maybe I want to mess with. So I'm going to import some libraries. And I'm going to go ahead and load this image of this espresso. And I'm going to create this thing that'll let me edit an image. And then I'm going to create, let's see here. Actually, I'll use the Python 3 one. Let's use this one. Oh, is it still running? There we go. Okay. So I'm going to change this one. Let's make it have less red. That should take a second because I'm doing it. That is not snappy right now. Okay, never mind conference Wi-Fi. I'll pick a different one. Factory. Oh, there it goes. Yeah. So I can toggle these sliders and modify the image dynamically, and then I can get back the result and work with it. So instead of just thinking I have to open up an editor and write my code, I can write pieces of code and explore the idea that I'm pursuing right there, change some of it and go back and forth. Like this model is built around, like, how does a researcher work at a university? Like the folks that build a lot of this, the tooling, like I'm the only member that's here in San Antonio, but everybody else is either at Berkeley or Cal Poly. And so the focus for them is, how do we build a better environment for neuroscientists to explore their data? And they have lots of data, right? Even after you've warehoused all your data, you eventually have to get to the point that you need to do some amount of analysis, and it has to get small enough that your head can comprehend what you're working with. And so this is giving you that environment.